Welcome to Black Hollywood Live. This is Geek Nerd Tech. Today, Elon Musk warns of the apocalypse. Showtime's getting sued and Nintendo's ripping us off again. Let's go.
You are tuned into Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Word up, no doubt. From the heart. Stop trying to sound like cats that's already out. The original, nigga. Bonus born, nigga. So I think it's about that time that we get into some real shit.
A little bit, you know? Sorry.
Hey yo, by the way, your headquarters. They got my man right now. Tell him what you
need. You a music producer now?
Programming
beats now?
Yeah.
You ain't never programmed
Come
the beat
on,
of
man.
Your
see,
life.
The NPC right here.
The NPC what?
NPC 12, 17.
Right.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm Joe Braswell, and testing my geek producing bona fides is Akili Shine.
Oh, what's my happening? Gosh. Hey, man.
Man, I'm nice with the like.
Oh my god!
No,
hey man, I would love to see you actually program some music. That would be funny.
It'd be funny.
And it'd
be fire.
Okay.
But yeah, I bet you I'm doing more programming than your boy Dre's doing. I don't know. That's shots fired, right. Dre. Like who am I?
Exactly.
Take that, Dre.
Yeah, right.
I'm just kidding, Dre. No, but welcome to Geek Nerd Tech. We are back. We took last week off for a bit. We're back today to talk a lot of stuff about tech and pop culture and various things. But I want to get into a little bit of about this fight since that transpired last weekend. Mayweather-McGregor. First of all, did you watch the fight?
Yeah, I had a great time.
And were you disappointed when your boy McGregor lost?
Not at all, man. I will say that I respect him as a fighter. I respect him as an athlete and what he was able to display, like his first professional boxing match. I mean, the fact that he landed more punches than Pacquiao did, who's been fighting his whole career.
Yeah.
Like, it says a lot. I mean, Mayweather definitely couldn't step in the MMA arena.
No.
The fact that he stepped in the arena and actually made it. I mean, this, I can't remember the last Mayweather fight that was actually somewhat entertaining. The fact that he brought all that to the game, you know what I'm saying? So,
ooh, man, I'm in the hot take corner. What is this? First take? Stephen A.
Hey,
Stephen
man.
A. Shine.
Hey, man. All in all, I thought it was a great fight. What about you?
I agree. I think you made some good points about McGregor. I'm just have to step outside of my, you know, extreme dislike for really kind of both of these guys and on some levels. I respect the heck out of it. I always thought McGregor had zero chance in this fight. I mean, just there's just no way. Like, if the top boxers in the world can't hit Mayweather, I doubt if a guy who can come in and there's no lucky punch. I don't care.
But he did hit him more. That's the thing.
No, he did. You're right. As I'm saying, I don't care if he's Irish, as everyone kept saying, but he's Irish. I don't care about that. You know, that don't mean nothing. But yeah, he did do well. I mean, he stayed there for 10 rounds. Whether or not that was because of it was part of Mayweather's strategy, or whether or not Mayweather let him tire himself out and then just went to work on him, or he hung in there, however you want to look at it. The money's incredible. I mean, you know, I think McGregor was worth like $22 million and made $30 million on this fight. So that's a good payday.
And he'll probably stand to make $100 million.
Oh wow! When it's all said and done.
When it's all said and done.
Yeah, and then you know, Mayweather was worth $680 million, and now he might make another $200 to $300 million.
Minimum $100 million, and he'll probably make about $335 million. It's retarded.
That's going to catch him in the B category. See him finish his fight and be a billionaire.
Exactly.
Wow.
I mean, there's only three. There's only three. MJ. It'll be him. Mayweather and Tiger Woods.
Wow.
Those are the only cats that either have made it to a B or close to a B.
To be in terms of athletics.
Exactly.
Yeah. No white folks. And a boxer, though.
Exactly.
In an arguably dead sport that you can make $1 billion boxing.
It's incredible. That's what Tyson said. He said, I was a killer. These guys are salesmen,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
exactly what it is.
That's exactly right. I want to just talk a little bit. I want to get to the Showtime story, which is interesting, but Showtime's being sued. Streaming was arguably suspect at best. Even the place that I was at, I watched it at Bledsoe's Barbecue. And they were having issues. It was freezing.
Really?
I mean, it was on multiple TVs, but the big TV kept freezing.
Wow.
You know, and so everybody was like, oh, like about 15 times during the fight.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, luckily it was on multiple TVs, so you'd have to switch to a little TV. But yeah, there's some issues. But I want to talk about just a little bit about the hype, the social media hype, mm-hmm. the promotion of this fight and in this climate, how it got to be just this racially charged sort of like promo fight. Do you think that it was all that was gassed up by the two of them to sell tickets, or do you think they
man,
were
this
really
is wrestling, man? This is yeah. wrestling. This is the I mean, theater of the mind.
Boy, dance boy, dance, Tug. Monkey. All yeah, that stuff, all, that's all gassed up.
All that is scripted, baby.
Yeah, you think so?
Okay. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, the dudes are smart. They're using the vehicle of television to be able to make money for themselves. And people are so naive that they believe this shit, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, it works. Like the hype is so strong, it's going to make you pay that $100. It's going to make you go to Vegas.
It did.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, it's record number. I mean, it did. I can't remember the last time I watched Pacquiao was the last fight exactly. that we watched, that I watched.
And I was just telling a friend, remember how the city was so electric, just the hype around that fight.
Right.
And the hype is nothing.
Yeah,
like, nothing. It's nothing.
Nothing, yeah. So that was, I couldn't imagine what Vegas was like. Vegas was
blowing
crackling.
Up on fire.
Because of that. Well, it's very interesting. It does remind me of the last time there was the Great White Hope was George Clooney in 1982 when, he was on the cover of Time magazine with Rocky. Like, come on, Time Magazine. He's in the cover of Sports Illustrated. Talk about our last great hope. Our last great hope, really?
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know, but he's anyway. So I was liking this to Cooney because I think he's I don't think he's a tomato can that Cooney was. But, it was all hype. But anyway.
Man. I will say, though, the Showtime thing was, it's one word, bandwidth. Like, how do you have a streaming platform that, you build around this epic historical event and you don't even have your ducks in a row?
Well, let me talk. So Showtime is getting sued. There's one guy who speaks for a lot of us who has some streaming problems, and he's like, I'm going to sue. So he's bringing out a class action suit against Showtime because they paid $100 and he didn't get his shit. And then there's another, probably millions of people had the same problem. Now, the question is, if they refunded all that fight to refunded all those fights to the tune of like $150 million, they're still laughing. But I don't know. What do you think? Do you think this clash is it a frivolous suit or does it make sense?
I mean, it definitely makes sense. What happens if that dude invited 50 people over to his house and spent money on food and drinks for them for a fight party that he couldn't stream?
Yeah,
like that affects his pocket. It affects his relationships. It affects his emotional stability.
Sure. Well, okay. Thank you, Cochran. How does should this happen? I want to ask you, how does this happen on Showtime's end?
Bandwidth. Like they didn't expect that many people to flock to it and flock to it as a streaming opportunity. Maybe doing it on pay-per-view, are people really going to stream it? And so I think because they didn't have the infrastructure in place to buy enough bandwidth to support the amount of saturation, amount of people, like they had the problem.
Now, 3 years ago, HBO did not have this problem with with that, arguably because maybe the awareness on streaming and the amount of devices and the way people stream now is different.
Way different.
I think, do you think that this is something that will continue to happen in the future? Because it's just going to get worse. More and more people will opt to stream, try to figure out how to stream, and I can't imagine that any network is ready for it.
I mean, we covered this before, like years ago. I don't know if it was CBS or if it was...
Grammys or Grammys or Oscars.
Exactly. Same thing happened. Like, they didn't think a lot of people, or they didn't prepare for a lot of people to hit the streaming platform, and it shut it down.
Yeah.
And I think... Hey, man, that's why Amazon and Netflix is killing these motherfuckers.
Yeah, it's true. That's very true.
They're advanced. They got the technology.
It's very, very true. So we shall see how this plays out. Hopefully that guy gets his money. I'm going to join that class action suit. I didn't pay. I didn't pay for that. I went to watch it. Anyway.
You're just going to put your name up in there anyway?
No. I want to go to Elon Musk because he is out there again. I mean, he never stops. So, like, every week he's calling for something. But this is true, he's calling for a global ban on killer robots. I mean, like, places like China and the USA have these sort of, not just these drones and not just these, mechanized bots, but they have these crazy automated robots and tanks that can roll up, sense people, shoot them down, pivot, highly powered, launch missiles, launch grenades. Like, these are like one-man killing machines. And the thing about these guys is there's a lot of them floating around. And what he's saying, the more we make these, the stronger we make these, and the more AI they have, we're just setting ourselves up for some Terminator 3, Terminator 2 stuff. So do you think we should ban them? I mean, what's...
I mean, there has to be some type of regulation. Like, I don't know who termed it or dubbed it, but it's called the third expansion in warfare. Like, first you had, gunpowder, then you had nuclear weapons, and now you have this. Like, this is serious because, like, I mean, how do you control it if it gets out? If it gets out of its master's hands, if the program is altered or whatever, whatever the code is broken, like
it's like RoboCop,
exactly. RoboCop like so, too. I think there has to be some type of regulatory things in place that prevent, you know, it being stolen, it corrupted, and the fact that we're developing this stuff, like it, I mean, yeah, it could serve to protect a country, protect assets, but it could also be the force that, that really is the end of us, the demise of us, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, I agree. It is scary. I think he's mentioned something like the type of warfare we see is unlike any other because you have, I mean, even if they're raging war against each other, like them unleashing what it's going to take to shoot these drones shooting each other out of the sky, drone aerial battles, like on the battlefield, like all that's like craziness, you know? And I don't know if a company, a platoon of Navy SEALs can take out a platoon of drones.
Nah.
So I don't know.
And we're already talking about cars that are more sophisticated to make turns and brake, you know, at certain things in the road faster than humans. You think an autonomous warrior is not going to be a better sharpshooter than a human?
Well, it's got the thing. Exactly. It's got the little, so I don't know. That is scary. But that may be sad news, but I got good news for you. Apple, the iPhone 8 is on the way.
Oh, wow.
It's coming.
Let's throw the party.
iOS 11. It's got the A11 processor. It's got crazy new design.
Bloop.
You know, 3D, I mean, does any of this, I've asked this before, I'm going to ask you one more time, does any of this stuff move the needle for you?
No.
3D facial recognition to unlock stuff, infrared sensor to allow in the dark facial recognition.
No.
Smart camera, you know, inductive charging finally.
No.
The longer power button, because you know, cause sometimes your thumb be like, the long, okay. all screen design, the OLED screen, just like, come on. Virtual home button. Stainless steel edges.
You should work for Apple. You're a great salesman.
All this stuff is nothing.
Man, come on, bro. This is, I mean, I'm sure for the fanfare, for the Apple apologists, which we tend to be most of the time on this show, this is great. But I mean, when you look at in the grand scheme of smartphone technology, it's not that sophisticated. Like there's Samsung devices that already have all of this stuff.
Yeah,
like so. I'm not jumping for joy because of this, like, and especially with the price point of a G ball and up, a G ball and up for this
and up.
Like, come on, man. Ooh. Like, I'm perfectly happy with my iPhone 7 Plus.
Yep,
I think it works great.
Yep,
and maybe there's something down the pipeline that's not listed in that article that's gonna like really win me over. But what you just listed is a bunch of trash, bro.
Okay. Trash.
Trash, bro.
Take that, Tim Cook. I don't know. I have to see it. I'll say all that shit now until I watch it. You know, I'm very susceptible to hype.
The hype,
so.
Yeah.
Very susceptible.
So Mayweather.
Mayweather got me. As soon as I may get real then when I watch that keynote, but we'll see. I'm kind of with you. Instinctively, I'm with you on this, but I don't know. I feel like that keynote's going to have me. But hopefully it's something that's worth getting.
I mean, so what do you think about the extinction of the home button, though, being that that was such like a flagship element of the phone from when it first originated? Now they're removing that.
I don't know why they are. And I like it. I like the new home button, which is like, you know, it's not, it's actual just the you know, what do you call it? It's just the clicking and not an actual depress, but it's just the vibration. I like it. I like it, you know, but maybe they'll do the same thing here because they started by doing it already with this flat thing here. So that was the first move. So they'll probably just do the same thing here. Wherever you click it, it'll have that same sensation.
Right.
So they've already proved they can do that.
That's what my girl says. But anyway,
that's unnecessary. Okay, I'm just gonna move on from right now. Spotify, Netflix.
Okay.
So Netflix plans to spend $7 billion on content next year. Now, this is actually a little misleading because a lot of that, the lion's share of that, will be spent on licensing existing things and kind of just re-upping and making sure they're secured because, you know, their goal is to obviously have 50% of their content original, but they're already spending crazy money, like $100 million on Jerry Seinfeld's joint for a couple of specials. You know, they're spending money left and right. But, you know, Ted Sarandos, who's the COO of the CCO, I should say, Chief Content Officer of Netflix, he said it's going to spend $7 million in 2018, and they're trying to get to that 50-50. And I don't see any issues with it. I don't know. How do you feel that Netflix is going to continue to ascend? Or do you think they'll hit a point of oversaturation? Or do you think they'll also maybe be lost with people like Disney that are pulling out? How do you feel about
that? I think Netflix is going to win because of what they're going to do, not just domestically, but internationally. I think they're still becoming larger in the Asian market, which is going to be an incredibly difficult thing, especially, I mean, obviously China is off the table, but other countries in the Asian market is going to really give them, you know, more subscribers. And I think because of that, like, they'll be able to have a lot of that money coming in, you know, all those subscribers coming in. So I think that, you know, signing people like Shonda Rhimes and developing their own like franchises, like, yeah. I think that's going to keep them winning. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think I like to see what they're going to do in just different areas like sports. Like, obviously, they have the comedic space on lock. They're trying to do, you know, a lot of comic stuff.
They pretty much own comedy right now.
Comedy, yeah. And, you know, I know they just bought that comic book and they're trying to start, you know, build their own, I guess, like universe, comic universe.
Yep.
So I want them to get into sports. I want them to get into like more, you know, different areas, like maybe like a music show or like stuff like that. That's more diverse. I don't really see that on Netflix yet.
Well, I mean, because I mean, obviously, I think you have like a lot of these licensing issues. You want them to get into the licensing game and figure out how to stream live? Is that what you're thinking about, or just more
just period
sports programming?
Period. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think they're gonna win. I think they're already winning, even though, you know, they're 20 B's, you know, in debt. Like, I think it's gonna pay off for them.
Okay. I tend to agree. I think that what's happened now culturally, what can't be underestimated, is you have a whole generation of people that, you know, I mean, we talk about the Netflix and chill, but just like Netflixing something is a verb. You know, the idea of like checking a show on Netflix, even all, I mean, like it's taken like literally 4 years for them to go from nowhere to kids growing up now being like, I want to watch that show on Netflix called Friends. Yeah. Like, they've completely erased NBC. They've completely erased all the, when you go to Netflix, it's like they just, it's like a, you know, not like the Borg. They just assimilate all of your shit. So
yeah, it doesn't matter where those like the origin stories of those shows are. Like, yep. no one cares that it's a Fox show or NBC show. Like,
it's all Netflix. Yeah, and so that's what they've, so given that that's their starting point, and they're 4 years in, and they're going to take that, and then they build a gigantic library that's growing of original content, and now they're having all your favorite stars and showrunners come to them as well. I mean, I don't know how it's really a scary proposition for network TV and also cable. I think that, you know, people like John Landgraf and others say that it's going to reach an oversaturation point, and, you know,
I think it will, though.
It'll probably, the bubble will burst, but right now I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either, but I mean, obviously that will happen, and there will be, you know, the next Netflix that's going to do something much differently or more innovative that will.
I mean, Apple's still coming.
Exactly.
Amazon's still growing, so we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Spotify, this is not really crazy news-breaking story, but Spotify removes all their white power music from its service. They should. The SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, who's doing like a lot of great work in identifying hate groups and where they live and who they are and making sure the world kind of knows who these people are and where they do business, which is, I think, just, they've done an amazing job. They've already been doing that, but since Charlottesville, now that they've got a lot of eyeballs and attention on them, that's been happening now. So this is just another win for Southern Poverty Law Center when they just put out a list of like, hey, these are all the people that on your service that are streaming white power music. Okay, thank you. Gone. And that seems to be happening.
Yeah, no one wants to be aligned with that. So, I mean, it does all these companies, you know, I mean, all these companies should, I mean, are taking that beat and saying, hey, you know, this is not, you know, what our values are, our corporate values are, and this is not something that we support. And yeah, we will make strong moves to, you know, distance ourselves from any type of languaging or activity surrounding that. So, I mean, I think that's kind of like the PC way of doing it. But I mean,
sure.
My question though, so would that also, because I read in that article that it said not just racial groups, but any type of hatred towards women or sexuality.
Yeah.
So would that even include like a lot of gangster rap music?
I mean,
that's very misogynistic.
Don't put a mystical record on.
That's what I'm saying.
Don't like, put a sugar-free record on.
So what does that mean though? Like, where's the line drawn?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is very interesting. This is the First Amendment slippery slope that these white supremacist groups basically live on. Mm-hmm. Like, they live there. This is the stuff that, you know, Luke was fighting on in the early 90s,
exactly.
You know, with Two Live Crew. And everyone's
right.
Like, freedom of speech. You
right.
can say pussy all day. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And so now these white supremacist groups
are
like,
or NWA. Fuck the police.
Yeah, fuck the police. They can say nigga. We can say nigga.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it is a slippery slope. I think that you know, what the Southern Poverty Law Center is doing is identifying specifically people that it's about hate. So I don't know. I mean, it is subjective. Ultimately, it's up to the network or the content provider to make those decisions. But it is a slippery slope, man. I don't know. But and also, I have a question for you. I think it's really interesting that, I mean, God bless the work that the Southern Poverty Law Center is doing, but I mean, does it really take the Southern Poverty Law Center to have to point out to all these companies, like,
yes.
Oh, hello, Spotify? Yeah. Listen, you've got 37 groups on your, we do?
Yeah.
Thank you, Southern Poverty Law Center. We'll take them off right away.
Like, absolutely. That's exactly how it works. You have a blemish on your face. Okay, we'll clean it up.
Oh, thank you. Exactly. That to me is what's kind of
That's
like
why I
weird.
Think it's like, it's like workflow. It's not, yeah. I don't see it as a genuine thing. It's just like, okay, well, you pointed out I have a pimple, so I'm going to go put some hydrogen peroxide on it.
It's, you know. Or it's just the same thing of like, hey, Apple, you have factories in China that are you know, populated by children. We do?
Oh, my gosh.
We have to shut those down
right
away.
We'll build factories right here in the States.
Yeah, like, it's all it's part of the same game, but I don't know. But whatever. I mean, like, you know, I'm glad it's happening. Either way, it's just a little silly. All right.
No more gothic death metal for you?
Goodness. Yeah, no more. Yeah, exactly. No more doom metal.
Right, doom metal.
So iOS 11 is going to make it impossible for the cops to force you to unlock your phone. This is one feature that I do like about the new iPhone, or at least the operating system. They're talking you out on this. They're talking about, well, this happens a lot because you out there in the streets, the cops do some shit, some dirty shit to you. You record it, and the cops like, give me that phone.
True.
Like, give me your fingerprint. Erase.
Right.
So you can't send it. So now what they're saying is you may record some shit, and then they can't unlock it.
That's right.
That's the good news. I mean, yeah. I think that's great. You press it 5 times. It goes into a safe mode. It also lets people know where you were, your last location, in case you're catching a beatdown. Like, hit it 5 times, throw it down, and then, you know, let people know where you were because something happens
like
to you.
So like a distress call, right?
Yeah, it's like a distress call. It lets people know exactly where your phone is. And that's also good and weird and bad. You might
accidentally...
who knows? Or like, I might like, you know, press it 5 times, put it in your pocket, and then like rob a bank, leave. I don't know, do something crazy. You know, there's all kind of stuff you could do. So I don't know, but it's very interesting. What do you think about this?
No, I definitely think it's interesting. I mean, we always talk about, you know, privacy and you know the lengths of what police and law enforcement agencies can do to, you know, capture our info. Right. So I think that these type of precautions and measures help to protect us, you know, the consumer, the user of the device. And so I think if someone is doing something that's illegal or incorrect, go through the proper channels, get a warrant, get the proper paperwork to be able to go through the phone or go through the house or whatever.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that, you know, Apple is and other tech companies are standing on the side of the consumer, of the user, because I think that, you know, that those rights need to be protected first.
Yeah,
so.
I agree about all that. And I just, you know, the phone, man, the phone is really a scary device that we have on us at all times because, you know, we are trackable. Into this next story, this story I follow in the department of, like, they can do that? Like, which is Uber, you know, Uber has a new CEO now, and so they're making all these announcements. They say they're going to stop tracking riders after they drop off. I'm like, that's a headline? Y'all do that? Like, apparently, unbeknownst to me and millions of other folks, after Uber drops you off, they keep tracking you for a whole 5 minutes.
Not for you though, because you are an Apple user. iOS they don't do that.
Oh, okay, thank goodness.
Only on Android devices.
All right.
But still.
Still.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank goodness. Well, now but why?
Because we want to make sure that, you know,
you're safe.
No, your home's safe. We want to make sure that the pickup location, the timing, and all the different logistics of how we pick people up. We want to get that analytics to be able to make our service way better for you.
We want to get the analytics as to where you're going, like how many times you go to the strip club, how many times you go eat chicken, how many times you do whatever, so they can better figure out whatever.
All the cliches, right?
Every time you eat watermelon, like, keep going. Like,
I'm eating chicken. I'm sorry. I'll talk about me.
You don't even eat chicken.
I love chicken. Oh, and strip clubs. But hey, no, but they want to know every time you go do those things, and so they can figure out how to better sell you shit. It's like or how better to, like, do Uber Eats.
Right.
Like, oh, like, I'm going to catch them over at, you know, whatever.
Right.
At the whatever spot. So at the sushi spot, I'm going to non-cliche it. They'll catch him at his favorite sushi spot. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I this is scary to me.
I completely agree. I mean, the fact that The fact that they have been doing this, and now they realize that, you know, oh, we want to put precautions in place to let the end user know that we are doing this, or the end user can decide if, you know, we want, if they want that to happen. Like, man, that should have been from day one. Like, privacy, again, like, protect the end user. Like, our information is not to be, you know, trolled on. Like, like, who knows what you're doing with that information? Like, all because you say it's one thing doesn't necessarily mean that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And so I do like the fact that they are giving options, and you can say never or sometimes or whatever the third option is. Like, maybe it's always. And I think that's kind of cool, you know, to at least have that. But at the end of the day, even if you do have that, I don't know what app is actually tracking my information. If I say no,
yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean they can't go in there and do it.
Exactly.
But the fact they have the capability means that it's possible.
Right.
And also, I was thinking about, you know, there's a controversy that's almost 5 years old now, like at the early days of Uber, the big controversy that's kind of been swept under the rug, but the Uber executives bragging about the God Eye, you know, the big giant screen where they can see every single Uber, where they go, where they drop off, and they would watch it and look for celebrities and be like, oh, looks like George Clooney's going over to so-and-so's house again. Like, what address is that? Oh, yep, he's been there for 4 hours. You know what that means? Like, they're, like, making jokes, eating popcorn, watching everything and the God Eye. That's scary.
That's crazy.
And then until they got outed in some story, and then they've allegedly cleaned all that up. But what, they just took it down?
Right.
Like, that's got to be around still. So it's just really interesting the power that these people have in terms of, it's just a private company who, not unlike Facebook and Google, who we've given all of our data to. And now they know where, not only where we're driving around in their vehicles, but also
where we're going,
after we get out, where we're going, because we still got the phone in our hands.
Exactly.
Or, you know, or even triangulation from picking the last two times we got rides.
The God Eye.
You know? So, yeah, there it is. The God Eye. It's crazy. Like, I don't know. It's really interesting. That's in San Francisco only, but able to look at that for the entire country or the world, or, like, look at a region,
that's zoom bananas.
In, and be like, oh, there's so-and-so. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. Nintendo, man. Nintendo just can't stop messing up. After the whole debacle with the NES, they did the Super NES. They made an announcement. We've learned our lessons from what happened last time. They released the joint at midnight or something overnight. It was sold out within 2 hours.
Yep.
And that's it. People went to sleep and woke up and it was sold out. And no, I mean, there's nothing to be found. I mean, what are they doing?
I mean, I think we discussed this.
But didn't you say you think this is on purpose?
I definitely think it's on purpose. But I don't know. I can't think of why it would be done this way. Because you would.
The PR is so bad at this point.
Obviously, if people are lined up to get these devices, like, you want to sell as many as possible.
Right.
So, I mean, I get the fact that marketing as a limited, you know, edition product. But still, like, make a few more, you know.
But
like,
is it something that's gonna roll? They're gonna roll both these out for Christmas to make a show.
That's what we thought last time. They didn't.
Yeah, I mean, like, November, like, oh, we found a whole warehouse full. Good news. Like, and then just and sell a bunch. I don't know. I mean,
I don't get it.
I don't get it.
Nintendo operates on a whole different spectrum. So who knows? Who knows what they're doing?
Well, yeah, we had no answers for that. Let's see. I want to go into some quick. This is one. Riot Games is an Annenberg Foundation. Want to bring a new curriculum into schools. They want to bring some, teach kids how to code and do video game design at an early, early age. We're talking about middle school and high school.
This is awesome. This is great. This is fantastic.
Good news, right?
Great news. I mean, you think about, like, certain schools that have, like, you know, like STEM support, you know, science, technology, engineering, mathematics support, be it from, you know, a nonprofit organization or from a major, you know, organization like NASA. The fact now video games are getting in this space and video game industry and education colliding, and you're giving kids, like, this immersive experience where they can learn about science and technology and programming, but also, like, social, cultural things.
Yep.
That is fantastic. Yep. I wish I had that as a kid.
I know, me too.
That's dope.
I did too. I mean, it reminds me, I was talking to these interns over at, these kids over at USC, and having a good conversation with these really smart kids, and they all go to the, I said, where do you guys go? Oh, we go to the Dr. Dre, Jimmy Iovine school.
Right.
I was like, really? Like, what? One kid had a class on house music.
Mm-hmm.
I just took my house music course. Mm-hmm. What? Yeah, like, mm-hmm. kids, this class on hip-hop dance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but what this class is on recording, all these different things that are offering at the college level, even that, right. That is amazing. And granted, it's a private university and it's USC, but I thought, oh, that was incredible. And the high school level, I couldn't imagine having right. a curriculum like that. And,
absolutely.
And you know what? It is serious. It is real, because that is, I mean, the video game industry is a $90 billion plus a year, you know, industry or some crazy numbers. I mean, dude,
coding is more important than cursive. I mean, they don't even teach cursive in schools. Like, yeah. They're starting to teach code.
Yeah.
Like, so the fact that, yeah, again, like these billion-dollar companies, billion-dollar industry is colliding with, you know, a system that is kind of like broken and yeah. almost disenfranchised. I think that's going to, you know, reinvigorate the love for some of these things. Almost like how the space race was in terms yeah. of how promoting math and getting man to the moon. Like, this might promote a whole different type of job. You know what I'm saying?
Because
it's not just one thing; it's like multiple things.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, I mean, in cursive, like writing long form. I mean, like even just printing and writing is one thing, but we're learning cursive for what?
Exactly. Like, no usage.
What is this? Zero usage.
Sign my checks. That's it.
To learn how to do a signature. That's right. Zero usage. All right. Well, the last couple things are two things that I do not want to see happen or do not care about, but I'm going to talk about them anyway. The first is, looks like they are doing, Warner Brothers owns Hanna-Barbera these days, a Jetsons live-action reboot on ABC. What?
Hey.
And this time, the regular Jetsons was in 1963, so they had it 100 years in the future, in 1962. They had 100 years in the future into 2062, and now this is going to be 2018, 100 years in the future, into 2118. Anyway, the point that I'm making is, does anyone want to see this? A live-action Jetsons? Elroy?
I mean,
George Jetson?
I can't say that.
You trying to see it?
I can't say that I would, but I'm pretty sure there is a market share of people that would.
The Jetsons are for baby boomers.
Okay.
So, I mean,
they still watch TV?
Baby boomers will be dead in 15 years.
This show won't be on for 15 years.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I guess Generation X grew up with that stuff, too, but, like, reintroducing this for, I don't know, I think it's a terrible idea. But
what about, like, Star Trek? Come on. It's kind of similar. maybe not as, I wouldn't say that it has the same impact as Star Trek, but in terms of the type of time zone that it's in, same.
What I do like about Jetsons is a very specific sort of, like, I like the sort of retro future.
Right.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the whole retro future look. I mean, like Tomorrowland tried to play on this and that with the failed movie Tomorrowland, but they did a lot of that sort of, like, you know, jetpacks and cool the Art Deco or design, kind of the retro future. I love that stuff. I think there could be something to be said if you do it that way. But if you're just trying to do a straightforward, like, you know, take us to 100 years from now and have a future, I'm like, that part of the fun of the Jetsons, it was all the same gags as the Flintstones. It was right. all like, you know, eat this pill, it's a pizza. Ha right. ha ha. You know, it's all like how funny it is to, you know, play a record player with a pterodactyl's beak. It's the same kind of jokes. I don't know where those jokes go.
True.
You know, they didn't work on the live action Flintstones. I don't know how they work on the live action, you know.
Hey, somebody thinks it's a great idea.
Yeah, well, speaking of other bad ideas, Warner Brothers is talking about not one but two new Joker movies. One apparently that will star Jared Leto and Margot Robbie as Joker and Harley in kind of a love story situation.
I love it.
That may be interesting. Then there's another one that's kind of like off, which is more of a gritty crime drama, produced by Martin Scorsese, directed by dude from The Hangover. What's my man's name? Todd Phillips from The Hangover, which is weird, but yeah, they want to do like an origin story, kind of like that's like a gritty crime drama of the Joker and his crime lord self. I mean, what do you think of this? If you got Joker's also showed up in Gotham, you know, we've got three Jokers in three universes. I mean, how hard can they lean on this?
The fans don't seem to be too happy about it. Like, oh. I mean, there's been a lot of Twitter action about, like, why would you do this? Like, one says, a Joker origin movie goes against everything that makes the character interesting.
Yeah. Like, no one cares about the pre-Joker days.
Right. I mean, I mean, there is something to say about an origin story, though, because like you fall in love with these characters and you kind of do want to know. Okay. Like, I mean, what's the difference between that and Wonder Woman? What's the difference?
Yeah. I mean, are you... Well, let me ask you. Did you like Jared Leto's performance?
I did.
Yeah, I liked it too. I did. Yeah. And obviously, like, I guess, whatever, two-thirds of it got cut out. But, you know, which we may never see. But, yeah, I thought it was really good. I mean, obviously, Heath Ledger and Jack Nicholson and Cesar Romero. But...
Everybody that's played the Joker has done a great job.
I agree.
You know?
I don't know that they bad... Joker performance, even right. Even Mark Hamill's Joker in the animated series, his Joker's good. I don't know that we need this. I'm not a big Todd Phillips guy. I mean, the Hangover 1 was good. Every other movie he's made, I'm out on, including the other two Hangovers. I don't picture him as a guy who's going to come make a gritty crime drama. Doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not asking for it. I don't want it. I do have some interest in Jared Leto, Margot Robbie thing, because that could be interesting. But, well, I don't know, man.
But can I ask you? I want to get your take. Like, what's the difference between that and Wonder Woman as an origin story? Like, is Wonder Woman more of an interesting character?
Yes.
Like, than Joker?
Well, Joker's a villain.
Right.
Joker's very enigmatic.
Okay.
So part of his mystique is that, like, he is mysterious. I mean, you know, the whole idea of making movies around the villain are also kind of weird to me.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're doing like a Venom movie, or they're doing a Sinister Six movie.
They just did a whole
Suicide movie. Squad. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess
ensemble cast of villains.
I guess. I don't know. I love the Joker. I don't. Yeah. I could watch Wonder Woman. I don't know if I could watch the origin story of the Joker, but we should soon find out. That's it. That's all I got, man. That's all I got for this week. What do you have? Anything else?
Did you get a chance to catch the Jay-Z interview on Tidal?
Oh no. Not yet. That's something I will do. Actually, I'll do that today. That's
pretty, a good time. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Is it two parts only?
Two parts. Yeah.
Okay. I will definitely check that out. I saw a piece of it. I think we talked about. I saw like really only 2 minutes of it, and thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
So in fact, I'm gonna fire that up.
Some good gems in there
straight away, and find out. What else? There's been a lot of Jay-Z stuff dropping on Tidal, like videos seem to be dropping left and right still.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Are you caught up on Insecure? What are your thoughts about season two?
I love it. I love it. I'm caught up. Actually, I didn't see Sundays yet.
Okay.
Still sitting there. But I love it. I love the season a lot. I'm still Team Lawrence. That episode a couple of weeks ago with him at the Bristol Farms with two white girls was, not that I would know, but it seemed very realistic. I know guys who may know about that. it was a good episode. I thought the show was really, 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 really strong. I mean, it's just operating at a high level.
Yeah.
I really like it. And East is doing a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. Of course, Game of Thrones.
I want to throw one other bone towards you. So I was reading an interesting article about the MTV Movie Awards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every year...
The VMAs?
Yeah. Every year since, I want to say, 2012, it's been on a decline in terms of ratings.
Yep.
But it's been an increase, obviously, in streaming it through different platforms. So why do you think that is? Why are the VMAs not as attractive as they once were?
Well, it's the same. It's kind of like the old guy. It's kind of like, you know, how you hear some older guys talk about, like, you know, I only date the same women. They're all the same age. Every year I still date a 25-year-old. You know, what I'm getting at is your audience is the same. Your audience is the same ever since as it was since 1984 as it is now. The difference is that 16 to 25-year-old does not going to sit and watch television the same way. So you can make whatever show you want to make. Of course, the streaming and all those multiple platforms are going to go up because that's where your demo is watching television. You're never going to be able to solve like how to get those kids to
couch and watch TV.
Yeah, cuddle around the TV and pop some popcorn and watch it. Those days are over. Like I did, you know, in 1985 or whatever, like when I was one. but yeah, I don't. It's that. I think the show, You know, Steve and I were talking about this because he's friends with the guys who produced it. Dinner Thieves. I think the show was extremely well produced. I thought it was extremely well produced. I thought the sets were great. I thought the
performances were dope.
I thought the pre-show was dope. I thought everything was great. I just didn't, you know, for me, the content, I mean, I'm not really into, if I'm personally, as an old
the
dude.
The content, what do you mean?
I mean, like, I'm out on 70% of people who performed. For me, I'm like, all right.
Gotcha.
You know, like, in other words, and then I think that Katy Perry was garbaggio, as and her jokes were flat as her...
Stop it.
Cheek.
Stop it. Right.
It's her forehead.
Right.
No, I thought it was flat. That was forced. I don't know. It just feels everything feels so appropriated and weird and uncomfortable to me. And I don't know if I'm just older, but I thought it looked amazing as a production. But
yeah,
in terms of, and it's 3 hours long plus an hour pre-show, 4 hours long. I mean, come on, dog.
That's how it's always been, though.
That's a long
I think,
time.
Just think it's interesting, just in terms of. I mean, I think you speak to it in terms of the viewing habits of. Yeah, that age demographic is definitely shifted. No one watches it in those ways that we watched it decades ago. And so, I mean, I think the star power is the same. I think, you know, people are more attracted to musicians more than ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. musicians not only do music, they have brands. You know what
right.
I'm saying? So, like, the whole culture and mystique behind these artists, I think, you know, does come into play. But it's just sad that, you know, MTV... once was known for really breaking stuff, like, you
right.
know, breaking down barriers, breaking artists, and now it's just like, it's kind of like you said, flat. Like, it's nothing really like, oh my God, did you see that? I can't believe it. It's
and
like,
that's the thing, that's what they were known for, from Madonna right. all the way exactly. to, even as was when Madonna and Britney kissed, and, I mean, there was always something, even you know, Eminem with
or even Kanye.
Kanye
no
said the thing, like, what? There's no, and then MTV's always guilty of trying to manufacture those moments. What was the moment this year?
Exactly.
Was there any moment that even felt like it was something?
That's exactly right.
What about, before we get out of here, but what about your boy, Adam Levine? You hear about him? Adam Levine of Maroon 5. He was very public about how he feels about the MTV Awards. He tweeted, and I'm going to see if I get this tweet right. Yeah, he hates the MTV Awards. He says, it's always excited to see how utterly horrible the VMAs will be. They've really delivered so far this year. Hashtag holy fuck. He hates the VMAs.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. He clearly has had some issues with them in the past, but he's been on record about how it's not about music anymore. He has all kinds of tweets talking about, you know, how bad they're going to be, how bad they are, and then he always just gets on and just slams them every year. So
I agree.
And he's in a personal vendetta.
Another note, too, is that, you know, music video culture is much different. Like, before, an artist would break their record, or they would break their artist name by their music video. That doesn't happen anymore. Who cares if you have a music video? Nope. Like, so what? We all have cameras. We That's are right. doing productions. Like, right. so, like, the mystique of music videos is no longer. So even though the art that goes into making them is still at a high level, but
yeah.
people don't feel the same attractiveness that they once did. So it's like
to that point. Now we brought that up because we had a couple minutes, but I just want to ask you the Taylor Swift video.
Man, what was it, like 40 million views in like 24 hours or something?
Yeah,
some crazy stat like
that video cost what, $2-3 million? That's a
movie.
That's a video.
Right.
The production value, right. the setups. It was like a freaking Hype Williams video back in the day. Like, a you know, it was like probably about 40 setups in that video.
Man.
About, you know, 15, 16 outfit changes. I don't know what's going on.
Hey.
That's...
Making a statement.
Yeah. I'm not sure if the song's any good.
It was 40 million views in less than 24 hours.
No, I'm just saying, I haven't really paid attention to the song.
But are you a Swift fan, though?
Wow.
83 now.
Million.
That's retarded.
Wow. Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. I mean, I don't know. Am I a Swiftie? I don't know. I mean,
you know, you
I'm
know,
not
you
I
know.
Mean, I'm not mad at her, but I'm not like checking for her either ever.
Right.
So
ever.
I don't know. But I just really amazed. Like, but she's really stepping up. I mean, I like the memes that showed her in her little formation talking about all the Beyonce memes. You know, I got my mayonnaise with my, you know, all the different like formation you know, comparisons. But I don't know. I'm not mad at her. But Katy Perry, any thoughts on her?
No thoughts.
Any thoughts on her, like, you know, with her house music track with Swish Swish Bish? Swish Swish Bish with the house music. Doom, 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 doom. The basketball flying through the air.
Can't.
Like, she's, like, looking around, her big eyes, doing some stuff. Like, you're not...
And my friend actually sings background for her.
Huh?
I have a friend that sings background for her.
Okay.
But I have no thoughts. I have no thoughts.
I don't know. What, her with the Migos, so they're alive.
No, like, thank you.
I don't know what she... And she seems really likable, but it's just way out of her lane. Not funny. Like, she's funny in real life, but maybe not funny on stage like that.
Hey, I do appreciate her activism, though.
I think she's probably a great person and a cool hang and a cool person, but I don't know, man. I feel like... And if you listen to the album on its own, I feel the production's good, the album's okay. But just every time I see a performance or a video or anything, it's not good. No bad. It's like a Miley Cyrus level appropriation. Stuff. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Like with the basketballs and stuff, like, I don't know. It's just Swish Swish Bish. That's the track? I don't know, man.
I'm out.
All right. Let's get out of here on that one. But I think videos are coming back because Kendrick's showing that. His videos are always dope.
Oh, very artistic.
His videos are artistic and dope. There's a lot of people still doing good stuff. Let's get out of here. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And shooting a major shout out to all the people down in Houston that are going through it right now. Man. Where can they find you?
On Instagram and Twitter. Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. and echo that shout out to people down in Houston and the entire, like, sort of South Texas area that's going through it right now. It's crazy. But thoughts and prayers, and we'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christian, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.